Hello and welcome to Jive Talking, the Volvo Sailing Podcast. I'm Guy Swindles, and in this edition, we're unashamedly all about the America's Cup. Well, nearly, as we'll also have a look back at the recent Rolex Maxi Worlds. We hear from Yachting World's Matt Sheehan and Daily Sail editor James Boyd. Oh, and some chap called Russell Coutts as well. But we start, as we should, with the Volvo Sailing Podcast news headlines. The America's Cup's going multi-hull. Fixed-wing multi-hull, as BMW Oracle confirmed the next race will be in 2013. Adam Minocprio takes the latest round of the World Match Racing Tour Championship with a victory over Torvar Mersky in the Danish Open. And in Italy, for the Maxi Yacht Rolex Cup, Ran won the new Mini Maxi title, Esimet 2 won the Maxi class, Y3K the Wally, Ranger the J class, and Hiteros the Super Maxis. OK, without further ado, let's go over to Valencia and Yachting World's Matt Sheehan, who has been in the eye of a storm as the America's Cup, and more particularly BMW Oracle, hit town.
I'm in Valencia at the moment. I'm actually in the BMW Oracle base the day after the big news swept through, and it's like a ghost town here at the moment. It feels like a great big tidal wave has swept through, and perhaps that is indeed what happened down here yesterday with some of the biggest changes that I think the America's Cup has seen in a very, very long time.
What was the general feeling, Matt, about going for the fixed-wing trimaran away from the entire tradition of monohulls, apart from the odd occasion, in the history of the America's Cup?
Well, I think that the move towards multi-hulls and indeed, as you say, the fixed-wing is something that's been the subject of a lot of speculation for many months now. So I think people have had quite a lot of time to get used to the idea that this would be a possibility. And of course, we had the demonstration of what it might look like earlier on this year in February during the America's Cup, when indeed BMW Oracle won with their giant wing mast. So it hasn't come completely out of the blue, but I think that people generally were sort of quite excited about it, and it started, you could see as you sort of looked around the press corps yesterday, that it was sort of, the reality was starting to sink in with people as they listened to Russell Coutts explain his vision and the team's vision of the future of the Cup, that actually it presents some very exciting opportunities indeed. And I suppose the main reservations that seem to be expressed so far have been in two basic areas. One is this just too big a step for some of the smaller teams who, let's not forget, in the 32nd America's Cup that was held in 2007, there were lots of established AC boats that people could go and teams could go and buy, second-hand boats they could rebrand, get up to speed, get out there, get racing. This time around, there isn't. Everybody's going to have to start from a blank sheet of paper. There are no second-hand boats to buy. So that's going to put the pressure on teams, certainly financially. That's going to be one of the issues. And to make this whole thing the success that Oracle Russell Coutts and the whole team want it to be, it's going to come down to money at the end of the day, and they're going to need to have other teams here. So it's going to be quite a challenge in that respect. The other issue that I think is on people's minds is that of whether multi-hulls are really suited to match racing. We're so used to seeing monohulls ducking and diving and twisting around and going through all the manoeuvres that they do that is characteristic of match racing, that it's difficult to imagine a multi-hull doing the same thing. But having said that, when you then start to think about, well, you know, multi-hulls with wing masts, we know wing masts can actually allow boats to do things that that they haven't been able to do necessarily with a conventional rig, maybe we just don't know what to expect. And so I think whilst it's a big surprise for a lot of people, whilst there will be lots of mutterings about whether it's suitable and a suitable step forward or not, the general mood down here during the presentation was a positive one.
Matt, I'm going to ask you this before we go back into more details. What's your feeling? Do you think this is a good idea?
I think it's very exciting indeed. I do think it's a good idea. It is radical. It will take some time to get our heads around how this is going to work out. And there will be some nervous moments more than just nervous moments, it is going to be difficult to raise the money. You know, the world is in a very different position financially than it was a few years ago. So that is going to be a bit of a worry. But, you know, one of the ironies is, I mean, I'm standing here in the Valencia, in the Darsena, the harbour that has become the heart of the last two America's Cups. And I remember coming here in 2004 when the venue was first announced and we'd all been flown into Switzerland and it was all a great big secret. They announced where it was and then we were all put on planes and flown out to this place, Valencia, and to a big party, big celebration. And then the following morning, we came down to this basin and looked around and it was desolate. It was just, it was falling down in parts. And you looked around and thought, oh my goodness, we'd just come from Auckland and from the big sort of festival that was down there, and we're looking around thinking, oh, I don't know, it's an exciting vision, this whole idea of basing it in Spain, but I don't know, will it really work? Well, of course, now, and there were plenty of detractors then, and of course by the time we got to 2007, they'd had record numbers of visitors, record number of spectators. It was sort of the biggest circus on the circuit, really, and it turned out to be a huge success. And I see this next phase as being similar to that. It's big, it's radical, it's extremely bold, but it's a great step forward.
Now, Matt, one other question, and away from multi-hulls, which is going to dominate everything, but they've announced the date as being 2013. There was a thought it might be 2014. Will that have any impact on other sailing events? The Olympics is 2012. The Volvo finishes in 2012. Can we get all of these things in with the America's Cup going in 2013?
Well, it's a very good question, and it's one that has been bandied about most of last night and continues to be a topic of conversation this morning. You're absolutely right. It's going to be a very crowded year, 2012. And there's going to be quite a few sailors who are going to have to make a rather difficult decision, not least of all the British America's Cup team, Ben Ainslie, Ian Percy, Bart Simpson, those guys in particular who want to do the Olympics, and who can blame them? It's Olympics on their home soil. Ben, if he was successful at the next Olympics, would be the most successful Olympic sailor of all time. So there's plenty to go for there. You know, they've already declared and made it quite clear that they want to be part of and compete in the next Olympics, and who can blame them? But it's going to be very, very difficult indeed. And as you say, the Volvo sailors, they're going to be involved in Volvo campaigns. And the problem that they're going to be facing is that while the America's Cup itself is in 2013, there are seven regattas that take place in the 72-foot cats in various locations, yet to be announced, but there are going to be seven regattas that these teams will have to be at. Now, seven regattas in one summer season, I mean, you're talking about the whole season. It's going to be very difficult to see how you could weave into that an Olympic campaign or a Volvo involvement. So it's going to be very tricky, and I think, you know, that, certainly for the sailors, is going to be occupying their thoughts for the next few days, for sure.
Well, Matt, thanks so much for joining us. Next up, we're going to be hearing you talking to Russell Coutts.
Indeed, yes, I spoke to Russell during the after the press conference and asked him a bit more about his vision of where the Cup was going.
Oh, I'm really happy about it. I think it's going to be really challenging to race. You know, I think some of the tactics will be the same, but you're going to see a lot of new tactics, and I think this is going to be a boat that people look at, sailors look at, and say, wow, that's the top end of the sport. You know, that is the America's Cup. And, you know, as I said, as I used the Formula One car example, you know, I just think, you know, club sailors will come and look at this thing and just say, wow, I know that I couldn't get that boat around the course, and these guys are good, you know what I mean, to race it.
Just to summarise, so, I mean, quite a big radical change. 2011 sees the fleet go into 45-footers, and then 2012 it's 72-footers, is that right?
That's correct, yeah. And it'll be actually the second event in 2012. So the first event will still be in the 45-footers. That's to allow teams a little bit more time to get their boats, their first boat designed and built. So I think the date in the protocol is April, and that was one of Vincenzo's requests, that we push that back. April 2012 is when that new boat will first be raced.
Right. And then there's seven events, according to the protocol, in 2012.
Yeah. Yep, we'll announce more about that when we announce the venues. You know, there'll be a program, and we hope to do that as soon as we can.
So what you're saying, that there'll be six of them will be in the 72 footers, and the first one will be in the 45 footers. Is that right?
In 2012, yes. Yes.
I can see a way around that. You have two events in one venue, and then.
Not necessarily. There may well be two events in one country or more. That's a distinct possibility. I don't think you'll see two events at the same venue.
What about the? I know two boat testing has been quite a hot topic for you. What's the situation? You can build two 70 footers. Can you sail them together?
You can use the two. You can buy two 45s. And match racing those and practicing those unlimited throughout the whole time if you want to. And the crew numbers on those are six and six, so it's about the same number. The crew on the 72 is 11. So in other words, you use your crew from the 72 to race the 245s and get your own match racing tactics and strategies and so forth sorted. As well as, of course, racing them at the lead-up events. And then the 72 comes on stream, and until, I think it's November 1st, 2012, you can't sail that boat outside the regatta periods. You can only sail one boat. And then you can launch a second boat, I believe, after, and you'll check the protocol, sometime around the end of the year, you can launch a second boat and sail that, let me get this right, against the other boat. But I think there's some restrictions on the amount of sailing you can do in those two boats, I think. I have to reread the protocol.
So you got a blackout period, which is something effectively a blackout period.
You got blackout periods through 2012, where you can race the boat at the events, and you can also race them. Practicing them for I think up to 4 days before, and I think a certain number, maybe afterwards, I think it's cut off. But this is all going to be determined by the regatta director in consultation with the team. So if the teams came back and said, look, we want 5 days or 6 days or 10 days or whatever, it would be the regatta director's job to sort that out. But the idea is to save costs and save teams having to go to venues and spend a lot of money at those venues, housing people and so forth.
How much will these, or indeed will these, any of these events, be in the 45 or the 72 footer? Will they count towards the Challenger Series as they did in the 32nd Cup?
Well, that's something for the Challengers to sort out. We considered that quite a lot, and felt that, and particularly took a lot of marketing advice on the America's Cup brand and how we didn't want to compromise that. So in other words, this series needs to mean something, and there are ways that we could make it mean something. But we didn't necessarily want to, for example, create a rule or a format that might compromise or make the challengers think they're compromised for their selection process. So their selection format is theirs to decide, right? And this World Series, we will have to create a meaningful platform. I think in the initial protocol there were sale bonuses and all that sort of thing for winning that series. But there are lots of other ideas as well to make it meaningful, for the teams. As you can imagine, you look at other sports and you don't have to look very far. So we wanted, just in summary, we wanted to keep the America's Cup year and the America's Cup event special on the one hand, but we wanted to create this World Series that is also special, you know, and not compromise the America's Cup brand.
I note that you've brought in the nationality bet for the youth. Are you thinking of one for the Cup itself?
I wanted to, and so did Vincenzo, and so did quite a few other people, but the teams themselves, I think two of the teams wanted a nationality rule, or two of the teams that we spoke to wanted a nationality rule, and pretty much none of the others wanted one. One step at a time. We sort of felt that the youth thing is easy to have national teams, and then with the hope of slowly adopting a nationality rule in the America's Cup.
I'll do it.
Funnily enough, a lot of the marketing advice, and I push people quite hard on this, is there are examples in other sports, like Champions League and so forth, where there is a national identity, but the players aren't necessarily all nationals. And in fact, you know history of the Cup, there haven't been nationals in the Cup in the early days for sure. Charlie Barr and the Scandinavians and so forth weren't nationals. But personally, I think it would make it a better competition. But I guess if we went there, we probably wouldn't have anywhere near the number of teams that we hope to, in this next format.
Cost has been a big issue throughout the Cup. Obviously, I know it's another issue on your mind a lot. Do you have any? Have you had any idea or target for what you wanted to try and get a typical campaign cost to be at?
Well, yeah, we want to be much lower than what it's been in the past. And so you go through the cost-cutting measures in there, and there's a lot of them. Chief amongst those, I said, is personnel, but the blackout periods also save quite a lot of costs. There's even the construction rule, mainly driven by costs, to allow people, if you're doing a boat in Russia, for example, it would have been enormously expensive, and it was in the past, to fly a whole construction team in to build the whole boat there. So you still have to build the hulls there, the shells, but then you can complete them, at the venue, at your base, or at a boatyard somewhere, that has all the other existing facilities that you need to finish one of these boats. So, and wings and so forth. So, and you go through the document, there's the consolidation of the weather program, so we cut out all the extra chase boats and weather boats. I think this team used to have 8 weather boats in its program in AC32. Well, they're all gone. You're not allowed them. You're only allowed 4 support vessels with the yachts. I'd have to go through the protocol, but pretty much on every page, I would suggest there's something in there that's there for a cost related.
What do you think it'll cost? What's the base cost for an America's Cup campaign?
I think a good we've distributed a budget or some sample budgets to teams, or Anthony Romano has, and already the feedback from some of those teams is they think they could do it cheaper than our budgets suggest. But we were basically putting some of our personnel costs in there and then creating a sample budget for them. And so a small team, would run at around 47 million euros. A bigger team would run somewhere between 70, and I think if you had, just built everything you possibly could and did everything you possibly could, you might get to 100, I think it'll be cheaper. In other words, I think it'll be cheaper than AC32. Yeah. Well, as I said, some of these changes, when you go through on the surface, are quite big. And don't forget, if you had done AC32 and you had transported the boats around the world, then it would have cost even more. And we were conscious of that, so we had to do things with the boat that would bring those costs down and make it more sensible. For example, if you have to fly boats in an Antonov, it's a lot more expensive than a 747 cargo. And you've got a lot less opportunity to go and work out a commercial deal with somebody to fly the team's boats around and so forth. So
so that budget involves moving the boats around the various...
Yeah, well, the event organiser, even though we put an out clause in the protocol that the event organiser is subject to obtaining the funding. But the vision is and the plan is to have the event organiser, in other words, ACRM, will transport the boats around. ACEA, or the event authority, will provide the funding, the budget for ACRM to then manage that process and so forth.
Okay, thank you very much.
Things like, things like team basis, for example. You know, I think this team spent something like 8 or 9 million euros on this base last time. Well, you know, I mean, you can go and look at McLaren's setup, and I think that cost them something in the same vicinity. But I think you can get something similar nowadays for around 5 million euros, and you can use it a lot more. It becomes a lot more versatile. You can use it for other events and sponsorship announcements and all that sort of thing as well. So there's a lot of ideas, and there's been a lot of work already gone in to some of these ideas to make it more cost effective. And I've got to say, Vincenzo was motivated by this heavily, and so was Larry. You know, and in fact, if we've got ideas to do it cheaper, we'll try and continue to work on those with the team.
And we're joined, I'm delighted to say, by the editor of the Daily Sail, James Boyd, who has been out with the Maxis at the Rolex Maxi Worlds. And James, looks as if it was a pretty good week's racing, all things considered.
Yeah, well, it's Portichello, so it's very hard to have bad conditions there. Although, it's very famous for several sort of strong winds which can blow there. So they had a mix of big conditions, and a couple of days when it was a bit lighter. So you generally get the big mix there, so which is what makes it one of the best sailing grounds in the world.
And you had some of the biggest and best there. Several classes competing. Where was most of the attention focused?
Well, this year was the first year where they had a thing called the Mini Maxi World Championships. And they're Infinite Winston, the organisers for the International Maxi Yacht Association, who run the event in conjunction with the Yacht Club Costa Smeralda, have basically redefined what maxis are. So you now have a class known as Mini Maxi, which is 60 to 72 foot long. You have the maxis, which are 72 to 100 foot long. And then you have the Super Maxis, which are basically everything larger than 100 foot. So there was 49 boats there. The largest contingent was actually in the Mini Maxi class, which were having their first world championship this year. And amongst those, there were probably 7 or 8 pretty tricked up Grand Prix race boats, and the rest were more of a sort of cruising element. But there was some fantastic racing between the Mini Maxis, which are now in their sort of third year of competition, and it was eventually it came down to the last day, Andres Soriano's Alegre and Mills 68, which had been doing particularly well this year, was leading pretty much throughout the regatta. On the penultimate day, for some reason, I think something like 3 or 4 boats hit rocks. One of them was Nicholas Zennstrom's Rand. Nicholas's crew managed to fix the boat up overnight, and they scored 2 wins on the final day and ended up taking the championship. So it was very hard luck on the Allegro team.
But terrific racing.
Oh yes, very much so. Yes, it was extremely close, particularly amongst the Mini Maxi racers. But they've been having a little championship which sort of runs throughout the year at various regattas throughout the Mediterranean. And the boats are getting much, much closer. They were joined, in fact, for this regatta by an extra boat, a boat over from the States called Titan, or Titan 15, as we would say in English. It's I'll leave it to you to pronounce the American. but it was skippered by a chap called Bill Koch, who was very famous because he won the America's Cup in 1992 with America Cube. But before that, he was one of the original maxi boat owners when they were sailing these large lead-bine IOR maxis, which was around about 70 foot in length. So he's made a return to the mini maxi class, chartering a 75 footer. with a crew in, including many of his old posse from the America's Cup in, 18 years ago. So it was great to have him back.
It does sound as if it is one of those, we know it is, it's one of those occasions where the great and good all decide to descend. As far as you're concerned, did you get a chance to have a spin on any of the boats? Did you particularly keep an eye on any particular boat that you've wanted to see for a while?
I suppose all the boats are relatively new, but only about two of them were actually launched this year, and I sort of tend to focus on the new boat launches a bit. But they had a lot of the, I've been obviously talking a bit about the Mini Maxes, but they have this whole plethora of these giant boats from 60 foot upwards, all the way up to these. And there's this fantastic two performance cruising boats called Saudade and Visione. Visione is owned by Hasso Plattner, who is basically the man behind SAP. So two of the richest guys in the world, and they're both racing boats in the sort of 150 foot length range. So they're enormous boats and very sort of long, slender. And pretty much all the big boats, they get all the rock stars in from from the Volvo Ocean Race and from the Masters Cup and things like that to help crew them. So it is, outside of the America's Cup and the Volvo Ocean Race, it's one of the biggest sort of gathering of the professional race boat clans around. So there was some pretty intense passing down the Clipper Bar, which is the big meeting spot down there.
Now, James, you mentioned America's Cup sailors there, and I can't really let you go for this edition of the sailing podcast without getting your reaction to the news. You've just been watching the best monohulls on the planet. They're not going to be at the America's Cup next time. What do you make of multi-hulls and fixed-wing multi-hulls at that?
Well, I'm a sort of second-generation sort of multi-hull aficionado, so I think it's like the best thing possible. That, in fact, it's like almost like a dream. For me, it's like a dream come true, sort of seeing the 34th America's Cup being racing cats and solid wing sails. However, it hasn't been so well received by some of the existing teams. You have the likes of Emirates Team New Zealand, for example, who've been in the Cup for getting on for 20 years or 18 years now. And they have this huge sort of legacy of experience built up in monohulls. And to be frank, that's the same with most of the existing Cup teams. So you're looking at Luna Rossa or even our own Team Origin. So it's going to take some getting used to, and I think it's going to be quite hard for the existing Cup teams to make the transition. But certainly, I think for the good of the sport, it's fantastic. It will absolutely revolutionise that and all the other measures which Russell Peterson's team are looking at introducing, from the new style of race courses, which might, for example, have a very short first beat and then a long for reaching or downwind legs, and the whole way they're looking at how they can kind of revolutionise the television and the viewing and the internet side of it. It is fantastic. It's definitely very good for the sport, and certainly I think the move to Catamaran will put the America's Cup back on, take it back to the forefront of innovation. My only slight reservation is quite how many teams will we definitely see all the, the high profile America's Cup teams which we've seen over the last decade taking part. Will we see some new blood, for example, some of the the sort of top French guys who are obviously very well-known multi-hull sailors, will we see them come in? And the biggest concern, which I expressed on the Daily Sail this morning, is really that I think that the flavour of the event is probably going to change quite a lot. We're used to having this incredible sort of prestigious event, which is 159 years old now. We're used to having these luxury goods brands like Prada and Louis Vuitton involved with it. And it's been it's kind of like a Bentley sort of event. However, with this move to catamarans, it's going to be very much more sort of crash and burn. It's going to be very much more of a high octane sports event. And I'm just sort of slightly worried that that won't attract the Pradas and the Luna Rossas. And I'm not entirely certain who it will attract. I guess it'll become much more like Formula One.
Well, we've seen interesting times in Formula One. We'll see interesting times at America's Cup. But, James, I think we'll probably be watching this space with you over the next few months and indeed a couple of years as more details emerge. But for the time being, thanks very much indeed for joining us.
Thanks very much, sir.
Well, that's it from this, the latest edition of Jibe Talking. Please join us again next time when we'll have all the latest from the world of sailing. And remember to check in at regular intervals to www.volvooceanrace.com.